the Pursuits of God podcast. I am your host, Emily Cobb. Today, I'm very fortunate to have with me Cara Martin, author of the new book, Worship: How to Use Your Work to Worship God. Thanks for joining us, Cara.
Greetings, Emily. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, can you start off by telling us a little bit about yourself, how you came to know Jesus?
Sure. Well, I grew up in a non-Christian family and I guess didn't have much hope of finding out much about Jesus, except that I loved horses and a friend invited me along to a horse riding camp. It was a place called Teen Ranch. And what she didn't tell me, all my parents, was that actually there was going to be some Christian teaching on this camp. In fact, they had this cartoonist and he drew pictures. And one of the pictures he drew was a picture of Jesus knocking on a door. And the cartoonist said that Jesus was knocking on the door of our hearts, but it was up to us to open the door to let him in. And I'd been intrigued by this person, Jesus, as this guy had been talking about him. And so, I felt I was ready to open the door of my heart. And that night I prayed a little prayer and I asked Jesus into my heart. And I just felt this warmth all over me and a sense of God's presence, which I would say probably I haven't lost throughout my life, which has been pretty amazing. I guess that's how I became a Christian. My parents sort of still say they regret sending me on a camp, but I certainly don't regret it. And I think what was quite amazing was the way that God really nurtured my faith, mostly through books, through Madeleine L'Engle and C.S. Lewis and Tolkien. I would just sort of grab these little quotes or phrases or ideas. And that was the way God sort of formed, I guess, an understanding of who he was and how he operated in the world.
From there, as an early Christian, what sort of support systems did you have in place? You were raised in a home that wasn't a Christian home. How did that impact your faith? And
It was a constant challenge. I made some mistakes. I remember, like, I would bring up what I believed on a fairly regular basis. And I remember one time leaving the dinner table and telling them they were all going to go to hell, okay, which didn't go down well with them and wasn't a really wonderful evangelistic stroke.
Sure. And how did that then lead into journalism?
Yeah, I studied communications at uni, and that was a time of testing of faith too, I guess. But really when I started in the workforce, I remember working at a TV station and just finding it a very confronting sort of situation to be in as a young Christian, as it were, still young in my faith. Because it was such an alien environment. There was a lot of pressure and stress. There was a lot of swearing. The value system there was completely different to anything I was used to. There were lots of ethical issues that came up about how stories I presented were taken and twisted in a way. I just found it a very confronting place to be as a Christian and trying to work out why had God placed me there and how on earth would I survive? And I found that, it was hard. What was really hard was that what happened on a Sunday in church didn't seem to relate a whole lot to what was happening Monday to Friday at work.
In your book, you mention a quote that by Mark Green, I think it was, that 98% of the people in church will spend 95% of their time outside of the church. And I thought that was interesting because we don't hear a lot about work in church aside from ministry or Christian-based work.
Yeah, I think that's Mark's point. He made that point at Lausanne conference. And it was the same conference, actually, where Billy Graham said that the next great mission field was the workplace, interestingly enough. Yeah. And I think those two comments are actually linked because that's exactly right. A lot of what we do in church is based around the activities of church, and yet most of us spend most of our time outside the church context. And there's not a lot of application or preparation for those places outside the church context. Now, I think this is increasingly a challenge for us. I think it might have been okay for a fair while Christianity had its place in society and community and was respected, but in an increasingly hostile environment, I think we need to be better equipped for those places outside the church context. And we need more than spiritual nurturing. We need a spiritual nurturing that actually prepares us to live out our faith in all the other places where we are.
Throughout your book, you really call your readers, I guess, to the point that we need to not be thinking of life as separate faith and work. And you share some examples of people who you've come across who actually do live that way. Can you share one of those examples with us?
Yeah, I can think of quite a few. I think probably the person who I saw bring about the most amazing change in a workplace was a friend in the book I called Stephen. Mm-hmm. And, he actually bought a business. And then when the business started, he started in the business, he realised that there was a lot of issues there. He'd known of some of them before he started and knew it was going to be tough. But when he started, there were even more issues that came to light. It was a business in an industry where bribery was the common way of doing business, where people were paid in cash rather than actually put on the books as employees. And there was even this very extreme behaviour, it would be for most of us, where there were these various women that were planted in the business by the board members to keep an eye on the business, on the working of the business. And it turned out that some of them were actually mistresses of these board members.
Wow.
So very confronting situation. And he knew that things had to change, and he went to talk to some people. Some people advised him as a Christian he just had to get out of there. He had to run away.
Yeah.
But he really felt a sense that God had sort of placed him there for a reason. So he decided that what he wanted to do was bring about change. And he had to be really wise about the pace of that change and how he brought it about. And he came into contact with our church partly because in one church, the minister said, "Oh, I'll pray for you, mm-hmm. But I really don't think you should be there." And he came to our church, and the response from the senior minister was, "Wow, what a challenging situation. How about I come to your workplace and you can show me what you're talking about and I'll pray with you there?" And so that context, or that idea of the senior minister actually being willing to come to the workplace and have a look and then pray into that workplace, was just really beautiful for this guy. And so, yeah, through a period of it actually took about a couple of years to bring about a real change in his business. He put everyone on the books. He stopped the culture of bribery. He told the women who were there that they had to live up to certain performance standards of the jobs they were in, or they would leave. And he brought about a really big change within that business. And what was really interesting was that change in that business actually filtered out into the whole industry, because the employees found that they were actually happier because they had the benefits of superannuation and holidays and those things. Once you remove bribery and corruption, it's more dependable for people about what a price is that's going to be paid, and a fair price. And he developed much better relationships with people. It wasn't based on this sleight of hand and how much money you had, but it was actually based on real relationship and trust. So the influence that his business has had has actually influenced the whole industry, and a lot of the old practices have now died out in the industry, and his business is incredibly successful. And he never backed down from the fact that he was a Christian, and that was part of the reason why he wouldn't tolerate what he saw as very unethical behaviour.
Yeah, sure. Throughout your book, what I really loved was this idea of, combining, I think, as we've mentioned already, the work and faith, that they need to be together. And you talk about actually the theological base for work, And you open this idea of work as a gift. Can you share that? Because many of us, when it comes to Monday, work doesn't feel like a gift. It feels like a chore.
That's right. Yeah, and I think by doing that, we're actually accepting the dominant narrative in our society, which is work is a terrible thing, and that work is just something you do and you get out of the way so you can really live. But I think I don't think that's the way the Bible portrays work. And yeah, seeing work as a gift actually reorients the whole way that we look at it. It's a much healthier and better way to look at work. I guess partly when I'm trying to describe what that might look like, I talk about parenting my kids, and I see my children as a gift given to me by God to look after. And when I see my kids like that, I don't hold on to them so tightly. They're not mine in a way, but they've been given to me to look after for a while, for a lifetime, hopefully, and to care for. But I see them as principally God's gift to me. And that changes my attitude to them in terms of being able to care for them and not sort of holding on and clutching to them. And I think it's the same way with our jobs, that if we see our jobs as a gift, it means we're actually grateful for them, for the work that we've been given to do. And in fact, for a lot of people in the world, there's a much wider recognition that work is indeed a gift. It's a precious thing to have, and we should actually be more grateful for what we have. But by seeing it as a gift also, it keeps me in mind that there was a giver. So if you've got a necklace that's been a gift, you think of the person who gave you that necklace. If someone gave you a Bible, you look at that Bible, and when you read it, you think of the person who gave you that Bible. So we're used to when we have a gift, thinking of the giver as well. And so if we see work as a gift, we'll never forget that actually God is the giver of that gift, and to actually bring him into our work and appreciate that work as this gift from God. And also then we see what we do as a gift that we offer back to God in worship, that he is our primary employer, as it were, and that we can see our work as something we can offer to him as a gift as well.
So in lots of this, you draw out that in Genesis, work was given before the curse. And I think lots of us are aware of the part, the impact on work, or as part of the curse. Can you explain to us a little bit about that, unpack that for us?
Sure. Well, it's depressing for some people to think about, but the very first thing that God asked humans to do is actually to work. But at that time, work was not this hard, difficult thing, as we often think about it. Work was actually a really good, productive, beautiful thing. In many ways, you could say we were made to work. So it says in Genesis 2:15 that God took the human and placed him in the garden and asked him to work the earth and to keep the garden. And the Hebrew words around the idea of working and keeping are exactly the same words that are used later in the Bible to describe the sort of worship that's done in the temple. So the word for work is also the root word for to serve God in the temple. And the word for keep is the same notion of keeping as in keeping the commandments. So this link between worship and work is established really early in the Bible, but we tend to separate it out after that. So God actually wanted to work with us, to steward, to care for his creation. And that's really what most of our work is about. Our daily work is about helping to care for this creation, for this gift of creation that God has given us. But there's this other beautiful image in Genesis 2, which I love, which is where God invites the human to come and then to name the animals. And sometimes we think, oh, well, he named the animals, so what? But actually naming things is a really significant thing, especially in the Bible. Your name actually says something about you in the Bible. It's a key to your identity. And so God invites Adam to actually name the animals. And there's this beautiful picture of there they are, and you can imagine in this gorgeous garden, which is untouched by anything that's wrong or bad at this stage. It would just be a beautiful scene. And God takes an animal, brings it before Adam and says, well, what are you going to call it? And then Adam names the animal. I just think that's a gorgeous image of working with God, which is something I think we lose a bit of and would be really helpful to us when we're doing our daily work. If we imagine actually we're working alongside God, God is bringing us this work, and then we actually work with him in it. I think that even very mundane activities like washing up could be transformed if we saw it as God actually bringing us these dirty dishes and then us working to make them clean and then God delighting in how clean they were.
Wouldn't that be a nicer way of viewing it? I think, absolutely. I heard Nancy Guthrie say recently that she said, I wonder what Eve felt when Adam walked through the door and walked through whatever they were living in and complained for the first time about his work. And I think that's the reality that most of us live in if we aren't thinking about work as worship. You talk about the fact that, a survey that you had happen brought about the fact that stress, ethical challenges and conflict at work are real elements to the workplace today and things that we're not immune from.
Yeah, that's right. And that was actually a survey of Christian congregations. That those were the three things that were said. Yeah. So, and stress at work is one of the number one things that everybody complains about work. That's a reality of sin and what happened with the fall once evil had entered the world. And I think we can trace it back to the curses that we read about in Genesis 3. And what's interesting, though, is that often we say work is cursed, but if you read the narrative really carefully, it's actually the process of working that is cursed. And just as the process of childbirth was cursed, childbirth is much more painful than it might have been and more difficult. So the process of working is cursed. So there's going to be weeds which just interfere with your ability to do your work properly. The ground is not going to be as fruitful as it might have been. The plants are not going to produce as much as you would have hoped for. And you have to work much harder to make things happen. You have to toil by the sweat of your brow. And that's really the reality of work that most of us know. We get frustrated at work, then things don't go right when we have conflict with other people at work, which is exactly what we see in the very next chapter of Genesis, in Genesis 4, when Abel and Cain, two brothers, are bringing their work before God, and there's jealousy about God's response to one offering rather than the other. And Cain actually kills Abel, which is not a daily experience of us at work, but we know that frustration at work and the jealousy and the envy that happens and the work relationship breakdown that can just make work such a difficult thing. So the reality of sin at work is a very real thing. And if ever you wanted to, we have a hard time getting people to talk about sin these days, but if you talk about work and how hard work is, then, yeah, everyone recognises that. But we need to remember that work is still a good thing and it's just the process that is hard. And once we understand that, I think that makes work a lot easier to deal with as a Christian in terms of we understand where this came from and why it exists and we're able to explain it. And it doesn't mean that we cross off work as just this hopeless thing. We know that we can do what we can with God's help to hold back the evil, the sin in the workplace, and we can do what we can to promote the good of work and to make the workplace a better place.
So do you think that is a process of redeeming?
Yeah, I think so. I think that sometimes we have a very narrow view of redemption. We think redemption is just about a spiritual thing so that we can live in heaven. But I think what we read in the Bible is a much bigger narrative. And what Jesus was talking about, even in his mission statement in Luke 4, was a much bigger narrative about a redemption of the whole world. And we know in Romans 8 that all of earth is groaning, as in labour, wanting to be released from the bondage of decay. And that is what the world is like. And we have an opportunity through our work to actually be part of this greater redemptive process, I think, that is before us, to actually work against what is going wrong and to give people a bit of the fragrance of the kingdom, as it were, a bit of an opportunity to get a sign of what could be better about work. I remember one time my husband was working at a place and he heard some news which was going to help a colleague, some information. He went to the colleague and he told the colleague, and the colleague just looked at him and said, "What are you doing?" And my husband said, "Well, I'm telling you this information so it'll help you with your work." And this guy said, "Don't you realise we're competing with each other? Well, you shouldn't be helping me." Like, this is crazy. But for my husband, it was a very natural thing to do to actually help someone else, especially in a work context. So sometimes even very simple things like that can really throw someone's expectation of what people are like in a work context. That's not every person's work. Some workplaces are easier than others. Some are very competitive, very difficult, very painful. Some are a little bit easier. But I think whatever our work context is, there is a way we can bring just a sense of the hospitality of the kingdom, the beauty of the kingdom. We can be a peacemaker to make work relationships much better. We can do a whole range of different things in the process of our working and in our, a kingdom imagination that would actually make where we work better for everybody.
It's beautiful. Have you ever been in a workplace or experienced a workplace like this where someone comes in and feels a bit of the kingdom?
Well, I'll give you a couple of examples. So I have a friend and she was talking about, I was thinking about the idea of beauty and how we can beautify our workplaces. And I was thinking of this friend, and what she does is she actually makes her workplace feel a bit like home. She makes her desk, she's what I would call a cubicle rat, in the sense that she's just got this tiny desk in an open plan office. But her desk is beautiful. She's got beautiful things all over it. She decorates it. She makes it colourful. She makes it gorgeous. So I was asking her about this and the difference that beauty makes. And she said that, you know, everyone comments on her desk and everyone comes to look at it because it's just a place of beauty. Mm-hmm. But she was also telling me that she's extended that to the tea room, that she's actually brought in some of her best china to have cups of tea. And what she does is she invites colleagues to have a cup of tea with her, and they have tea in these gorgeous china cups. And she says other people want to come and have tea with her as well, because people gather around something that's beautiful. And then they want to sit down and they want to talk. And she said it's amazing the conversations you have while you're sipping tea from a beautiful china cup. And that's just a tiny example, but you can actually see that people have been impacted just by bringing a little bit of beauty into what would normally be a very ordinary and dull and efficient place.
Sure.
But I'm thinking also of my own experience just a couple of days ago in the city. I went to this coffee shop, and don't think I'm just obsessed with caffeine at this point, but anyway, but this coffee shop had this beautiful arrangement of tables which invited you to actually sort of, I guess, talk to other people, even complete strangers. So it's not a place to go to for an intimate talk with one other person. It actually encourages a sense of community. You sit at these long tables. But it's very open, it's very clean, it's very elegant. I was served really nicely, like really personally. It wasn't just a barking, what's your order sort of thing, but it was actually a really nice greeting and a bit of a chat and how was your day and things like that. And when I sat down, the waitress came up with water, which doesn't happen often in coffee shops these days. You have to get your own, but she brought water to me. And once again, she didn't talk to me as if this is something she had to do. She actually talked and listened about what was happening in my day and what was going on. And then I had my coffee. The coffee was beautiful. It was beautifully presented. It had gorgeous coffee art. But it was a great cup of coffee. It was really high quality. It was really excellent work. And then I finished my coffee, and then a waiter came up and he asked me if I wanted anything more and what I'd thought of the coffee. And I hadn't gone in wanting two cups of anything, but in the end I ordered something else because I guess I appreciated the graciousness of his manner and the conversation. I just wanted to dwell a little longer in that place. And I think that's the sort of thing we can do at work. If we don't see work as just a job, but we see it as an opportunity of giving people a bit of a taste of the kingdom, then we can create that atmosphere of hospitality. We can do excellent work. We can actually treat people with dignity, our colleagues and our clients, so that they get that sense of being known a little bit, which is all a bit of a foretaste of the kingdom. This place is called the Cross Eatery, and I haven't asked yet. I've only been there once, and I thought it wasn't the right time to ask straight away whether there was any Christian influence. But definitely, that's if I was running a coffee shop and I wanted it to be a taste of the kingdom, those are some of the elements that I would include in it.
That's beautiful. It makes me want to go and have a coffee there. I think one thing that you bring about so beautifully in the book is that work is a means for God carrying out his work through us. And it's almost like an invitation for us to be using our workplace for God to be doing his work through us. And I thought that was just such a beautiful thing that you raised there.
Yeah, and I think this is the way God carries on in his providing for his creation. He does it through us and our ordinary work. And it really changes when you do have that sense, then it really changes the way you see your work. And the example I'd like to talk about is Angela, who got in contact with me. And she texted me, and her text calls me alarm at the beginning because she said, "I'm sitting here reading your book and I'm crying." And I was like, "Oh no, what have I done?"
Yes,
but then she said, "I'm crying because for the first time, I understand that God is actually interested in my work." And this is a woman who for 30 years has gone for 30 plus hours a week to work as in administration jobs, who never thought that God was interested in what she did. And just sort of getting that sense that God could actually be interested in your work and you could partner with him in your work has really transformed the way that she sees work. So just I've had some ongoing communication with her, and she was saying how now she looks to see what God is already doing at work to join him in the work that is going on there. And it's meant that she has noticed what's happening with her colleagues, that she's tried to offer some kindness to other people, that she's seen that she has actually a really important role. She has amazing contact with lots of people, and she can brighten people's day just by the way that she responds to them. And she's also started working on those relationships and really invested in those relationships. And she was telling me just the other day, I saw her, I met up with her, and she was telling me that the job that she's been doing has been sort of changed a bit and it's going to be advertised. And people were asking whether she'd apply for the job. And the sorts of things they were saying were like, oh, you should look for work closer to home, or you should look for work that pays a bit more. But now that she has this idea that she's doing God's work in this place, she was thinking, well, actually the bigger question is, does God want me to stay there? Is there some work that he still wants me to do? Is there more work to be done? Is the investment that she has put into those relationships something that God is going to use and to grow on? So her whole way of looking at her job has changed dramatically just by seeing her work as something God is interested in and her doing God's work in that place.
Wow, it really is transformational thinking, isn't it? It's countercultural. It's not the way that we naturally think about work. It's wonderful the way that we are actually equipped for it, that God doesn't just leave us. His spirit is with us. And so often we think of spiritual gifts as being something that we use for the church, something that we use in ministry. How do you see it a little bit differently?
Yeah, well, I think we have this funny thing that once we walk out of the church doors, any spiritual gifts we have somehow switch off, which is pretty crazy if you think about it for a second. But if you thought about the gifting that you have, especially spiritual gifts, as actually being used in the whole of your life, then that opens up all sorts of possibilities. And the gifts that the Bible names are quite extensive. They're gifts of administration and leadership and teaching and generosity and all sorts of different gifts. And, of course, they can be used in the workplace as well. And I think that's actually, we have this amazing advantage as Christians in the workplace that we have the Spirit of the God who made the earth with us, in us, working through us, gifting us for this work that God has laid before us to do. And I think what we lack is probably a bit of imagination in what God could actually do through us in that workplace. If we could actually look for opportunities to bless others through our work, if we looked for opportunities to actually transform our workplace and that God could gift us with his Spirit to do that, I think that actually changes things quite significantly. There was a woman that I heard talk about once where she really embraced this. And she was working in a call centre, which you wouldn't think is a naturally very spiritually rich place. And it's a tough place as a Christian because there's so much pressure just to do things all the time, to make these calls. But she asked God to really bless her in that workplace. And she, when she made the calls, she didn't go by the general rule, which was, you know, hit the person and if you're not going to get through with a sale, then hang up on them. She actually would talk to people as if they were real human beings, as if they were made in the image of God. And she would pray before the call and then talk to the people. And she started getting these really good results because she at times, and this was the weird thing, she would at times say to someone, actually, you know, hearing more about what you're doing and what you're up to, I don't think this product would be really good for you. So I'm just going to hang up now, but I hope you have a good day. Wow. And sometimes, and this was so countercultural, like her bosses would freak if they ever heard her say that. But sometimes the person on the other end would say, you know, you're right, but I think actually it'd be really good for my sister. So I think I'll take one anyway, you know.
Yeah.
But she just found that people really responded to that. And partly it was because she was honest with them. She had integrity. And you don't expect that when you get cold called over the phone. Mm-hmm. And she also treated people with respect. And she really felt that that was an empowering of the Spirit in the sense that she prayed that God would actually help her to understand the other person on the line and what they needed and how she could help to meet their needs. And sometimes, you know, it was listening and a bit of care, and sometimes it was the actual product she was being paid to sell. But she, regardless, she just felt that God really blessed her work in that way.
Beautiful. Now, I live on the Northern Rivers where retirement is pretty key here. People move to the area to retire. There's a lot of advertising about retirement. In terms of your thinking about work and biblical thinking about work, what part does retirement have to play in that?
Yeah, this is the really unfortunate thing. I've read the Bible through several times and I can't see the word retirement in there anywhere, which is really unfortunate. And
it's,
I think
part,
no, sorry. And one of the things is when God took the human being and put him in the Garden of Eden, he didn't pay him a wage to do that work. God is interested in our work, whether it's paid or it's unpaid. That sort of notion of paid work and job is really not the way God sees what we do. He has a whole range of beautiful things that he wants us to do, that he's gifted us uniquely to do with our unique set of skills and experience. And some of it's paid and some of it's not, but God values all of that work equally. And so, yeah, I guess our society seems to be a bit obsessed with this idea of you work as hard as you can to make as much money as you can so you can retire.
Yeah.
But I think a biblical way of looking at it is you work steadily doing the work that God lays before you, and you keep working, whether it's paid or unpaid, for all of your life. You're always looking for opportunities for how God can use your particular gifts in his kingdom work. So it's a very different way of looking at it. It's, again, a countercultural way, but I think it's a much healthier way. I think sometimes what happens when we do that sort of working hard and grasping thing is that we make work an idol, and we almost get ourselves wrapped up in that work and what that work is. Sometimes we see that work as actually our identity. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things is if you think about when you go to meet someone like at a party or someone new, the first question we tend to ask people is, what do you do?
Yeah.
And the way we respond is not a list of activities often, it's actually, I am. I am a teacher. I am a doctor. I am a mother. Mm-hmm. All these I am statements. I am statements are a statement about our identity. And we frequently think about who we are in terms of the work that we do, and especially the paid work. And we tend to value people by how much they're paid for the work that they do. So that means that even if you do get to retirement, frequently people find that transition incredibly difficult. If your identity is actually bound up in the paid work that you do, when you stop that paid work, you have a real identity crisis. Whereas if we see, as I think is a much more biblical way, our identity as being in Christ, then it's not so much we can be in Christ, whatever different things he puts in front of us, whatever we do, and it doesn't change whether we're paid for something or we're not paid for something. I think that's a much healthier way to be.
Mm. And how does our work here on earth point us to our work later in the new heavens and new earth?
As well as depressing people with this idea there's no such thing as retirement, the other way I depress them is by saying there's going to be work in heaven. Like, that's just horrible. I mean, all the images that we have from advertising, et cetera, is that we'll be lying around on clouds in heaven eating delicious chocolate, apparently, and just singing all the time, playing harps. But the actual passages in the Bible that talk about the new heavens and the new earth, and I'm thinking particularly of Isaiah 65 and Revelation 21 and 22, they actually reference work in heaven. And we don't really know what that work will be. In those passages, they talk about agricultural work, but of course that's just part of the imagery that's there. But I think it's going to be an amazing sort of work. I think it's work as it was meant to be. I think it'll be work where we get to use our gifting and we're not held back by sin. Our work is, again, productive and imaginative and creative. And we're getting to work with God and we're getting to work really well with other people. I think it's going to be an amazing sort of work. And part of the work that we do here, I think, is part of the design work for the work that we might do in the new earth. I think that God smiles when we have a breakthrough with a new way of doing something, or when we have a new creative thought, and we make something special out of God's creation, whether it's an artistic thing or solving a problem. And I think those things aren't wasted in themselves. I think that's part of the design work for the new earth, in a way that we can't even imagine really right now.
So it almost is like our work now is training for our work then. Is that the way?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think it's training in many ways, because the other thing that I've pondered is that the fruit of the Spirit are really difficult to develop when we're by ourselves. So, for example, I can be patient, very patient, when I'm all by myself, but get me with another couple of people and patience begins to wear thin.
Or a few children.
Yeah, oh man. Absolutely. Motherhood was the biggest skilling up in patience, I can't tell you. But and that was part of the work of motherhood, was God growing patience in me. And that's the thing, that when we're working, that's often when we are tested the most in those sort of things. It's at work that we sometimes have to choose joy, where we have to choose to love the unlovable, where we have to choose to be a peacemaker when there's conflict. So that's the way, often the place where God really grows our character, grows those fruit of the Spirit. It helps us develop them and mature and be formed as Christians.
I love that about your book. It's just easy to read. It's got lots of illustrations. It's really practical. So thank you for spending the time to write this beautiful book. It's been shortlisted for the Australian Christian Book of the Year 2017. Where can we get a copy?
Well, it's available in all good Christian bookshops, well, most of them. The Wandering Bookseller, Carl Grice is sort of a real fan and a real wonderful support. I can recommend that website. It's available through Koorong. It's available as an ebook on Kindle or Kobo, or also as a PDF. So my website, www.workship.com.au, has a buy tab where you can see all the different places if you want to get a copy.
Brilliant. And to finish off, a question I like to ask people is, how do you pursue God personally in just the day-to-day, aside from podcasts and writing lectures and things? How do you pursue your relationship with God?
I do this thing which I recommend to other people. Every morning I wake up and I think, I say, "Hello, Jesus, how are we going to work together today?" And it's sort of a cute way of just acknowledging Jesus straight away, but also acknowledging that I want to work with him. I don't want to try and do this work on my own, and I want to do the work that he wants me to do as well. But as well as that, another thing that I do, which I found a really helpful practice, is something that I call a mini examine, which is I think about the last 24 hours, and I think about how are the ways I've been open to God, what have been the ways where I felt prompted by God and responded to that, what are the ways that I've done something constructive, which I felt is in line with what God would want me to do. And then I make a list of the things, the gifts that I feel that God has given me. And sometimes those gifts are as simple as, you know, a beautiful day, enjoying God's creation. Sometimes it's an unexpected conversation with a friend. There's lots of different ways that I am aware that God provides a gift for me. Mm. And then after those more happy lists, I then go to how have I been close to God. And I find this a really helpful practice to do. What are the things I've done where I've disobeyed God, I've ignored God, or what have been the things I haven't done as well, like the things where I knew I probably should have rung that person and I haven't. Mm-hmm. So I think about the ways I've been close to God. And then finally I write down, what am I going to do as a result of this sort of examination of consciousness and conscience. What can I do? Is there a phone call I need to make? Is there something I need to fix? Is there a reminder to me that I keep failing in this one area that I need to focus on and pray about? So that's a daily thing. How have I been open to God? What gifts have I received from God? How have I been closed to God? And what can I do next?
It's beautiful. Thank you so much for joining us on Pursuits of God today. I want to particularly thank you. It's the second recording because we had a little technical hitch. And so I am very grateful that you've been happy to spend your time talking to us about work and encouraging us to see our work as worship. So thank you so much, Cara.
Absolute pleasure to talk with you, Emily, and I love your work.
Thank you. You have been listening to the Pursuits of God podcast. For information about our episodes and for detailed show notes, please go to pursuitsofgod.com/podcast.